What's up, guys? Dave Lipson here, and welcome to another episode of the Love and Thunder podcast. We got another awesome guest on our podcast today. We're here with Josh Cook, the owner and founder of Legendary Aviation Coffee. Josh is an OG. He's got a military background. He's been doing muscle anarchy for years, and he's doing some really cool stuff on the coffee front. And I think, wait, what a better subject to talk about with our audience than coffee, because I know a lot of our dudes are fans of coffee. I love drinking coffee. It's kind of the most popular drink in the world, probably. So we're here with Josh, and we are going to do some coffee talk. Josh, welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks, man. This is an honor to be here, and I'm glad that we actually connected and were able to actually make this happen. So
Hell yeah. Thank you
very much for being here.
Dude, I've seen you like in our Muscle Anarchy program. You know, we have tons of athletes on there, and we get to post in our community pages. And I remember seeing you like doing some killer lifts and, you know, being an active member of our community. And I love trying to support our people that love to train, but also have some really cool things to offer. Give us a little background of your story, because you got a really interesting story starting with the military and kind of leading you to where you are right now.
Yeah. My background is very interesting. I would say the most diverse that I know of a lot of my friends and family that are out there. And I'm very active. I was very active in muscle anarchy. As this company's taken off, I've had to kind of figure out how to work those workouts in to where I can really focus in on them and not be so distracted with the growth that this company is going through. But my background is Army aviation. I've been in aviation for the last 20 years. Tried to walk away from it three times, and the dude upstairs kept pulling me back. And so from the Department of Defense military side, I went Department of State in Afghanistan, and that's where I found CrossFit. And then I became a CrossFit athlete, became a CrossFit coach. Then I kind of expanded and went down different rabbit holes where I was like, you know, there's something here that is really getting my juices going. And I've got $17,000 worth of certifications and hundreds of books, hundreds of hours, thousands of hours of coaching clients. James Fitzgerald was actually one of my CrossFit coaches or one of my mentors way back in the day. And, you know, I was working on becoming a CrossFit athlete. I was actually getting to be right there at regionals to the games level. And then I got married and all that just kind of spiraled out. But then I got my bachelor's degree in criminal justice with the concentrations on computer forensics. My master's is in IT, networks and security. My doctorate is going to be in strategic leadership. And I just kept going down these different rabbit holes. Well, in 2016, I was like, let me figure out what this coffee stuff is. Let me figure out why everybody likes coffee. So I bought, you know, $100 worth of different coffees when I was in Maryland. Everything tasted the same. Had that same roasty, toasty bitterness, just over roasted. Like there's burnt. It was nasty. It's the same undertones. And I'm like, there's something here though, because coffee is the most complex drink and the most popular drink we have on the planet Earth. It has 800 natural flavors by itself. We don't need to inject hazelnut. We don't need to put mushrooms in it. We don't need to do anything. We just need to have higher grade coffee. And so I found specialty grade coffee. And then I figured out what air roasting is versus drum roasting. Figured out why you want single origin versus blends. There's nothing wrong with blends. A lot of people do them wrong though. A lot of them do like a Colombian Brazil. Well, those are very similar in the characteristics and the textures. And
it's the unleaded fuel of the coffee industry.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, there's something more to all of this. And so I kind of dove down that rabbit hole. And so I've been coffee roasting since 2017, 18. I brought this company to life in 2019. The dude upstairs told me, you're not going to make this, you know, we're not going to allow this to go, you know, mass like what it has in the last 6 months. So I came to Texas finally, get away from California lifestyle. And so the dude upstairs put every sign in front of me, so they're saying, take it to public's eye. So April 2023, I took the social media more public. I was a lot more active on it. I brought the website to life and I really just put it out there. And next thing I know, I run the numbers the beginning of this month for the last 6 months, and we have a 942% growth.
I don't know what it is about Texas and small businesses and coffee specifically, because or years ago, I used to drink this coffee called Chameleon Coffee.
Yeah.
And it's cold brew concentrate. It was, you know, the first cold brew concentrate I'd ever had. It's like rock fuel. And same thing, like it didn't taste acidic or anything like that. But I remember those guys were in Texas. I believe they're in Austin. Yep. And then one of our other friends, who's the owner of Strong Coffee, is also based out of Texas. I mean, like, it seems like Austin's the place to go start a little instant food or coffee company, you know? Like, it must be great, and there must be such a great network there for people who have done a lot of that stuff to leverage each other with.
Yeah, and, you know, believe it or not, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but there's a lot of white labeling. So you'll have big coffee roasters that will actually roast coffee to their profiles with their beans, but then label it to somebody else's name. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this to my own roast profiles. I'm going to
I know. We have friends that have their own coffee brands, and I can tell you right now, they're not roasting the beans. No. They're not doing it, you know. They're like athletes and stuff. They're not going to be roasting beans.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with it. And, you know, there's, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's just not what I wanted to do. I wanted to have the ability to really talk to my coffee and to the farmers that I actually work with and things like that. So I wanted to have that background, that intricate detail that a lot of people just don't have. And that way you could see the passion, the drive, the tenacity that I have for this company. The just everything is me. And then I bounce ideas off of some people, so some things that I have some non-disclosure, so I can't lose the brand itself or what I'm actually trying to do. And you know, it's been a blessing to do this, and it's a lot of fun for me. This is something I'm still doing.
About, like having your own company, Josh, it's exactly what you're saying, how the company is you. Mm-hmm. It allows you to tap into aspects of yourself that where you can't normally go otherwise, because you don't have that investment. You know, when you're working for somebody else, it's just like, you don't have that same kind of level of fear and desperation each day that you're gonna be able to protect and grow and nurture this baby of yours that is your DNA, you know, written all over it. And it's a double-edged sword, because when you win big, and when anything that goes wrong ultimately just falls on you. And so, you know, it can really end up being that a balancing act between things. And I know you'd mentioned that before. You're like, hey, I was doing lots of muscle anarchy, and then, you know, kind of get sucked in. You got to figure out how to stay balanced in your life and in your marriage, and, you know, balance with being a dad and at work. It can be really challenging. I love coffee. Like, I really like it. And you brought some stuff up to me that really resonated for you guys out there that do like drinking coffee. One thing that it can do, it does to me, and I think it's done to you too, Josh, is it can sometimes cause like IBS, like irritable bowel syndrome, where like you drink a coffee and you're like, oh shit, I gotta go run to the bathroom now. Diarrhea with coffee. And that's kind of a tricky one, because, you know, you just don't know like what you're going to be triggered by all the time if you have that kind of stuff. And I know that, there's always, it's weird, like some specific types of brands of food, like you're eating the same food, but there must be something different about it where you don't react to it. Talk a little bit about, you know, the mechanics of the coffee and how you're able to do things like reduce the acidity and make it a little bit, you know, friendlier to drink.
Yeah, so let's go with acidity first. So when someone says acidity to me as a coffee roaster, that is the citrus notes that are inside a coffee. So that's typically our higher elevated coffee. So like my Peru has more of an apricot front end to it, and that's acidity inside of coffee. A lot of people will argue with me, and I'm going, listen, like, you cannot argue with a coffee roaster on what acidity is. It's quite literally a tasting note inside a coffee. But to the average person, they think acid indigestion. They think acidity like that, which is, you know, perfectly understandable. We've kind of convoluted that word. So with the acid indigestion, what happens is low-grade coffee gets over-roasted, and then they put an oil to infuse flavor. It's like when you see hazelnut flavored coffee, that's an infusion of flavor, and it's typically done by an oil. There's a lot of different ways to do this, but the ones that I know of, it's actually like an oil that they actually put on there. But when we over-roast coffee, believe it or not, so coffee, there's 10 different levels inside of coffee roasting. It starts in cinnamon, goes all the way into the Italian. There's no such thing as a light, medium, and dark. We utilize that in the 1980s and 1990s, and it's kind of just stuck around because we didn't have what we have today. So today we actually see a lot different of roast profiles. So I do a lot of city, city plus, full city plus roast levels. And that's where specialty grade coffee really shines. But acidity comes from low grade and it comes from over roasted coffee. What happens when we drink or we have a bunch of charcoal? Like think anything charcoalized, a steak that is extremely well done that's charcoalized. Eat that. Tell me how it tastes. Tell me what it does to your gut. Well, when we carbonize and charcoalize beans, we're actually causing an acid issue inside the stomach. And what does all that do? Well, the stomach wants to run it out or it pushes it back up. And that's where all that acid indigestion comes from. So I don't do dark profile coffees. If you want full body coffee, we go to different regions inside of the world. So like a Colombian coffee naturally has tendencies to be a fuller body coffee, even at high elevations. So like the one that I brought onto the market, I still know it's a Colombian coffee because when you drink it, even at a light roast, it's got that nice, beautiful, full bodiness, but it doesn't have that bitterness, that just over roasted coffee taste. It's gross. So I have more of passion fruit, hibiscus, and honey. Those are the three tasting notes that we picked up when we actually tasted this coffee. And I say we because I'm not what is called a Q-rated grader. I don't have the palate to pick up on all the different nuances that coffee has. There's only 8,000 of those people in the world. We have 7.7 to 9 billion people on Earth. So when I sit there and say my coffee is independently graded, that means that these people have actually done their job without bias. They don't know me. They don't know my company. All they know is it's from this particular region. I need you to grade it and tell me what it is.
So most people out there have probably been to Starbucks before, I'm assuming, right? That's kind of the world's most popular dominant coffee brand right now, at least. So I think that's kind of a good baseline to grade against, right? Everyone's tasted some Starbucks coffee. When you taste Starbucks coffee against aviation coffee, what are the differences that you're going to taste?
So Starbucks, in my personal opinion, and this is not a dig against them because I don't want to get sued, but their lowest level of roast profile is my darkest. So that's a big difference.
They like to go darker, right?
And they do that because they're trying to keep the
blend.
Yeah. They're trying to keep the consistency throughout the entire stores, which is, hey, nothing wrong with that. But they're also buying huge amount of coffee. And to buy that much coffee in specialty grade, you really can't because it's considered what we know as micro lot. So let's sit there and say like Brazil. Brazil produces a ton of coffee. And at what they need at Starbucks, they would need to buy hundreds of thousands of tons of coffee in one season in order to produce the amount of coffee they need at the different stores.
Like how much coffee do you get out of like a cup of coffee beans?
Well, so you got 100, the standard bag of coffee that we buy as coffee roasters is 152 pounds. Then you reduce it for moisture content. So you get about 130 pounds. So it's like 70 grams is typically what we use inside of a coffee pot, the normal coffee pot. And even though it says 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, and that's considered cups, cups in coffee terms are 4 to 6 ounces. It's not 8 ounces. It's actually 4 ounces, believe it or not. So when you see 2, that's 8 ounces. So 70 grams to 40 ounces of water is considered the perfect ratio for, the standards that we have inside of coffee. Some people like it stronger. So like a Colombian or Costa Rica coffee that I have, in order to get that fuller body that really make it a strong coffee, we just go to a 1-to-14 ratio. I've been playing with a 1-to-12 ratio inside of a French press, which puts head on your feet. It's so strong, but there's no bitterness. There's no astringentness. There's no this, there's no that. So a lot of people think we need to go to a darker roast in order to get more caffeine. That's not entirely the case. Caffeine, when we go to a darker roast, becomes inert. It becomes a gas, believe it or not. So what happens when you're actually taking that bean and you're now grinding it down, you're putting it into your coffee maker, you actually have a caffeine molecule that is compromised in a sense. I'm not saying this is the absolute truth. This is the way that my brain looks at this. So when we have a caffeine, when we have a molecular structure going into an inert gas, and then we're trying to ingest that, and what the way it reacts with the central nervous system isn't the same way it reacts when it's in its more natural form at a lighter or medium with the specialty grade coffee. Again, higher grade coffee, lower grade coffee, the way it talks to our central nervous system is completely different. I'm telling everybody this, like, have my coffee and watch, see how driven or focused your energy is versus where you're just uncontrollably shaky or you're going to the bathroom every 45 minutes because
it's you're really having like the same idea with just supplements in general, right? When you look at supplements, nutritional supplements, typically what you're seeing is you're finding stuff that's already broken down in some sense. Mm-hmm. Right? So you take protein powder, for instance, right? Whey protein powder, typically it's hydrolyzed, right? So it's kind of watered down, separated, and it's already in some ways, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like pre-digested for you.
Yes.
Right? So when you eat it, it's going to get into your system quicker and your body's going to react to it differently. You could have the same amount of protein in, say, 4 ounces of steak, and that's going to be a completely different experience in terms of how that protein is broken down, but more so the other micronutrients that are available to you with that when it's in its more natural whole foods form, right? So, and that's kind of the big thing with supplementation is like you can use it to fill in the gaps or fill in the pieces, but the whole is always going to be greater than the sum of its parts, right?
Yes.
There's a synergy to the way, you know, God's plan here. He made this stuff, you know, for a reason, and mm-hmm. and it seems to work better when we don't fuck with it too much, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's really cool. So, all right, let's do some rating, right? Because like some people, they're coffee snobs. They got their own hierarchy. All right, so let's start on a scale of 1 to 10.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to know, like when I grew up, my parents, they grew up with they would always do the Maxwell House,
oh, yeah.
Folgers crystals.
Yeah. So
nobody knows this. Coffee used to come in a can, people. Okay.
Yeah.
In an aluminum can, and you would have to peel off the top like a can of tennis balls, and then you take this thing, these Folgers crystals, and you put it in there. And then these commercials, like the best part of waking up,
yeah, this Folgers in your cup.
That's how I tasted coffee, and I was like, this is fucking awful. Like, how do you guys drink this? And granted, you know, I think that's most people's reaction to coffee the first time because it is different, it's bitter,
yeah.
But, you know, that type of stuff, I think, like, if we're thinking about quality of coffee, that's probably the lowest end of the scale. What are some coffee companies or some producers that you look at that you're like, hey, this is who I want to emulate as legendary coffee. This is the grade or caliber of coffee that I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. So it's definitely not Folgers or Maxwell. There's a company out there that Scott Rao, who is considered one of the experts, if not the expert in coffee roasting. He's been in the business for about 30 years, written multiple books on it, done a lot of consulting on it, travels the world, things like that. He owns a company called Prodigal Coffee in Colorado, where he used to live, actually. And that just came to market. I have some of his coffee now. He's actually like when it comes to creating coffee in a single origin and showing you exactly what coffee can be, that is the guy. Now, there's another company that does blends extremely well called Onyx Coffee. They're in Northwest Arkansas. And they're another one of my mentors. I mean, when it comes to blending something, that's who I go see. But they have amazing geisha coffee, which is considered like the premium ultra. This is like your epitome of all coffee. And right now they have it, and I'm going to give them a little plug. It's like $115 or $125 for, I believe it's 6 ounces. I bought it a few years ago.
Let's reverse a little bit. It's $125 for 6 ounces.
Yes. Because geisha
that better coffee. Be some good coffee. That's incredible.
That is the epitome of all coffees. It's like it's if I don't want to touch on, you know, real steroids, but you have like testosterone cypionate, which is a long chain testosterone. But then you have testosterone that when it gets into your system, it's in your system immediately.
And you think, so, yeah, like everything, things metabolize at a different rate. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sitting there saying this is how this coffee is, but when you taste it black, you're like, there's no imperfections. The flavors are so pronounced that you're just like, it's like getting hit with an apricot, with the ripe apricot, as if that was one of its tasting notes. And it's just right in your face.
Wow.
And it's incredible. You're just like, you don't down that. You savor that cup of coffee over the next 30 minutes because you don't want to rush through it. That's one of those coffees, like for me, like that's a coffee for me. That is a coffee snob. That is not something you put sugars and creamers and make it a mocha fraca laca latte. You know, that's not that coffee. That is my competitors. That's the Starbucks. You know, that's because they need to mask the bitterness with their darker roast profiles. That's what milk and sugars do. Not necessarily sugars, but when you add sugars with the fat inside of milk to the creamers, it really does hamper down that. With my coffee, you don't need it. It definitely enhances the coffee. It doesn't mask. And I've done a lot of experimenting with my coffee as of recently to ensure that the way that some of these other people have this coffee, it works, and it works beautifully.
Josh, so, have you heard of this coffee? And I don't know where I saw this or read this. It's supposed to be one of the world's fanciest coffees that's actually handpicked out of elephant feces. So the elephant are fed the coffee, it goes to their digestive system, then the beans are handpicked, and it's some ridiculously expensive cup of coffee. You heard that before?
I don't know if it's the elephant. I know the cat one, and that's Kopi Luwak, and that was made popular by the Bucket List.
Okay.
Yeah, so it does exist. It's
not. Wait, so what? How does that work? What do? They feed the coffee to cats and then pick it out of their poop?
So back in the day, it was actually wild cats would eat the cherries because coffee starts as a cherry.
Yep.
When the cherries fell on the ground, the cats would eat them, and the fermentation process through the digestive tract would actually remove the pulp and the mucus and that stuff from the bean itself, and then they'd poop it out, and that's an actual fermentation process. So the fermentation process that we do today is called anaerobically processed, which creates really funky-dory coffees where you get like an IPA. Think of, I'm not an IPA fan, but there's IPA snobs out there that love double IPAs versus a blonde style beer. That's a two totally different ways of making beer. And that's the way that anaerobically or fermenting coffee is. It creates a very unique one-off style coffee. You'll never have a coffee like that again because of that process.
Yep.
And that's why
the cat digestion process quite the project. Plus, you don't get the cat superpowers when you do it by hand, you know.
Yeah, and almost all coffee is done by hands, especially when they're in the mountains. You can't put a machine on the side of a mountain. But Brazil, because a lot of their land is flat, they use a lot of machines. They're very technologically advanced in Brazil with their coffee, which creates a very generic cup of coffee. I've tried 25 different ones. When I did a recent cupping event, a lot of them had the same undertones, just a normal Brazil coffee taste. And that's not what I wanted to bring to market either. I wanted you guys to have something that's really clean, that's very unique, but not so unique that you're like, this isn't coffee. You still have that undertone of coffee, but you've got some uniqueness to it that when you add, if you add sugars or creamers or non-sweeteners or whatever it is, it just enhances. It makes everything come out more bright, more acidic, not stomach acid, but acidic being the citrus notes that are in there. And, you know, like my El Salvador, that is literally my best seller. It's 4 to 5 times as popular as all the other coffees. Now, the other coffees are 1 to 2 bags away from each other. I mean, they're so close, but El Salvador is just another level. And that's not even my highest rated coffee. It's just what put me on the map. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to bring a couple more.
Is there a centralized place that like rates coffee? Because you mentioned like ranking and things like that.
Yeah. So farmers actually have their own individuals, curated testers. And then the importers, exporters also have it. So everybody has their, I call them biased people towards different farms or different importers, exporters. which is all fine and dandy, but you can get different levels of grades by doing that. So if you have independent graders that all they do is that's what they do, and they accept these coffees from people like me, and they actually sit there and go, okay, this is, you know, graded this way and this is graded that way. If you have three people do it, then you have a varying, you know, you have different opinions, but they should all be based off of the exact same standards, because everybody has to get certified through forget what it's actually called off the top of my head. It's not the Specialty Coffee Association, but it's the CSCI thing. No, it's a coffee international scoring, basically. CSI? Can't remember right now.
So but, when someone sees the word, and I've seen this marketed before, like it's artisanal coffee, what does that mean?
Nothing. It's marketing. It's quite literally marketing. And you'll have people argue against me with that all day long. But okay, let me preface that as well. Let's go to the supermarket, me and you, Dave, and let's go find premium coffee. And we'll find it on $7.99 for a bag of coffee. Yep. Now, is that premium? Or there's a brand out there that calls themselves a premium brand, and they're all over Walmart. They have the most Walmart shelf space of all the coffee companies out there, and they're $13.99. I'm going, what's premium about that? Because it's a play on marketing words. It's a pry against people's ignorance. And the only thing that I have done, and I'm completely transparent, is I had to key a term. I call myself bougie coffee. Yep. And bougie being the slang term, not the actual Louisiana term. And the reason is because bougie in the slang term means humble beginnings, but like a sophisticated lifestyle, sophisticated characteristics. And that's exactly what coffee is. It starts very humbly by these South American farmers or the Ethiopian farmers that handpick these things, that sort them by hands. They don't do them by machines. Machines assist. But they're sorting this stuff, and then it goes through a drying process, and then we roast it, and then we actually brand it a certain way to create such a coffee that is of a sophisticated lifestyle or a very luxurious drink. That's quite literally bougie coffee, and people don't understand that. Or when they actually have me explain it, they go, that is genius. I'm like, yes, that's my marketing. That's the only thing I do. I'm not going to tell you about the mold or the organicness or this or that, because quite literally all of that is marketing and advertising to pry on the ignorance. 99% of coffee, I'm going to let everybody know, is mold free. You cannot roast coffee and have mold survive. Mold needs wetness, dampness, coldness in order to thrive. Once you put 500 plus degrees on that bean, all mold is dead.
Yep.
So there's myotoxins and all that shit, pardon my language, but all that shit that the other, I'm not going to name any coffee names out there, but they know who they are. They're prying on your ignorance through bad marketing. Great for them, bad for you, because you're paying for bad coffee.
Okay, so for our guys out there, because I know we get hooked on this stuff and we start slugging coffee all day. How much coffee is too much coffee? What's the limit? How many cups?
Well, you know, now you're talking about how much caffeine somebody can ingest. So for me, I can only have 400 milligrams in a given day. That's with pre-workout. If I have more than that, I create the sphincter muscle inside of my gut actually stays open. So I create my own acid ingestion.
Acid reflux.
Yeah. And then in the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'll get a splitting headache right back here. When I was in the police academy, I got slugged by the red man. He hit me so hard. He had me tumbling. I almost passed out. And I have a little bit of scar tissue right up in here. And so if I have too much caffeine, that's where my splitting headache happens.
It's funny you mention that, because I always talk to people about like just caffeine intake in general. And there's a really interesting study out of the UK that looked at caffeine and performance, right? And what was really interesting about it was, one, it showed that there is a correlation between performance and caffeine intake, specifically with regard to upper body strength.
Yeah.
So when they were testing and retesting, they said, okay, we see that the group that was taking caffeine before they lifted were able to actually see a greater level of performance improvement with upper body lifts. I'm assuming it's something like a bench press, but really no effect on the lower body. And I was like, well, that's kind of interesting, because I can see how it affects the central nervous system, and you experience things like increased focus and increased mental acuity and increased central nervous system development. But, you know, when you think about these nerves coming from your central nervous system, the stuff upstairs is a lot closer, you know? Yeah. So maybe that's why. But they determined that the limit, the tipping point where the juice isn't worth the squeeze anymore, yeah, so to speak, was right at about 5 milligrams per kilo of body weight.
Yep.
So if you're saying, hey, I'm a 220-pound guy, 100 kilos, 500 milligrams is the point where more isn't helping you, but it's actually causing, you know, other non-favorable reactions in your body that are going to, you know, potentially cause harm. But the interesting thing about caffeine, too, is that with regard to timing, you know, it's got this 5-hour half-life in your body. Now, I'm not sure how that compares to coffee, because when you look at things like caffeine anhydrous, it's just like the supplement form already broken down, like a caffeine tab or the caffeine you get in your pre-workout drink, right? There's no bean to try to break down and suck that out of, right? Yeah. So it might be a bit more readily available and hit you quicker versus something that you've got to work through your digestive system a bit more to really extrapolate the caffeine out of. But with that 5-hour half-life, you have to remember that if you're a 5 p.m. workout guy, right, and you're slugging, let's say, you know, you do the 16-ouncer of coffee, you're going to go big, you know, before your lift. And let's assume that that's got, say, 300 milligrams of caffeine in it. There's going to be 150 milligrams of caffeine still working and operating in your system at 10 p.m. when you're trying to go to bed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, caffeine intake in the latter half of the day can really get in the way of good, deep, restful sleep. Wow. And the benefits of sleep, at least in terms of athletic performance, are so important because sleep is really, one, it's where you grow. It's where you heal and recover. You'll see, you know, when you get sleep, your brain is going to start to heal and recover, your heart, your vital organs, your digestive system. And then when those vital systems are getting the adequate amount of recovery, then and only then do things like muscles begin to heal and all that other stuff. So if you're not able to get that good deep REM sleep, you're really operating at submaximal recovery, at least in terms of, you know, how your muscles are going to recover. And the really interesting thing about just the sleep and brain chemistry and caffeine is, like, you know, during the day, there's that chemical adenosine that builds up, you know, in your brain throughout the day that actually makes you feel sleepy. Mm-hmm. Caffeine acts as an adenosine blocker. When you sleep, you know, the adenosine clears out of your brain. And so, you know, if you get good deep sleep and it clears out, you wake up and you're ready to go. But if it doesn't clear out, that's when you wake up kind of feeling groggy. And that's why caffeine is so popular in the morning. Because you still have, you know, that adenosine in the brain making you feel kind of sleepy and lethargic. And so you're able to knock out those receptors and get that kick, right? And so, you know, I guess for the point of all this whole spiel is, if you guys are out there and you're, you know, you're working out or taking caffeine supplements or doing something awesome like Legendary Aviation Coffee, just make sure that you understand the basic chemistry in your body of how it's going to affect you, you know, because it all comes down to living your best life, right?
Yep. So the other thing that we also to kind of add to that or have people go down rabbit holes for is adrenal fatigue. So people, there's adrenal fatigue and there's adrenal failure. And a lot of these studies show that adrenal failure is real, but they're saying adrenal fatigue isn't. And we can go down that rabbit hole, but I sit there and go, listen, Charles Poliquin actually showed the time under tension way back when, before science ever caught up to it. He basically showed that time under tension is king. And then, you know, science finally caught up to it. Well, science is still trying to figure out this adrenal fatigue thing. And I've seen some of the most recent ones. And one of my mentors, Mike Keasley from Nova 3 Labs, he actually sold that off, and I can't remember what Mike's doing now, but he's been a firefighter, paramedic all of his life. He is one of the geeks that go down that nutrition rabbit hole. And if I get stuck on something or if I have really deep questions, I go see that guy.
Well, so it's interesting you mentioned that, because coffee sometimes is part of the conversation around stressed out adrenals.
Yes.
Or what you're calling adrenal fatigue or adrenal failure. And it I don't think it really has anything directly to do with coffee.
No.
You think about it, if you're not recovering or you have an energy issue, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're not absorbing nutrients. Maybe you're not getting good, deep, restful sleep. Maybe you're, you know, not getting the right kind of nutrition in during your day. Maybe you're exposing yourself to too much stress. If instead of addressing those issues, you try to mask it with caffeine because caffeine makes you feel better, mm-hmm. it's really just putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound, yep. right? So, yep. you know, you kind of have to address the underlying issues. Now, there might be something when we were talking about the limits of caffeine where maybe if you go beyond those limits, that could be contributing. But I don't think most people, you know, I really don't hear of anything obscene anymore, at least with regard to caffeine intake. I remember back when, you know, pre-workouts were getting really popular. Yeah. You know, people were trying to market the most jacked up pre-workout supplement. This thing's got, you know, 500 milligrams of caffeine in it. Yeah. And even now, I don't know if you've heard, but there are a few companies that have gotten sued. Like one of them is Prime. Have you ever seen those Prime drinks? I don't know if it's called Prime Energy, but they do a hydration drink and they do a caffeine drink. And I think they got sued. They got sued because their drink had 400 milligrams of caffeine and somebody, you know, gave himself cardiac arrest from it. Or there's another one at, Panera Bread. Do you know Panera Bread?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you go to Panera Bread, one thing you got to be aware of is when you get their hibiscus tea lemonade, that it's caffeinated. So apparently someone who had so much hibiscus tea that, again, they gave themselves a cardiac arrest from having like 20 times the amount of caffeine anybody should ever have or something like that. But there definitely is an upper. It's not like a more is better kind of scenario. But usually your body tells you that stuff before you even, you know, start to feel the effects of that. And I know that there have been times where I've just been sipping on coffee all day. And sometimes what you'll feel is like you actually end up just getting a headache because you've had too much caffeine.
Too much caffeine. And then we talk about if you're having caffeine, this is a personal reference. This is not scientific or anything like that. But I found that if I have just normal caffeine in the morning, it works. But then if I don't have anything to eat and my energy levels start tanking about this time frame and I try to have more caffeine, that caffeine's not doing anything for me because I don't have any substance for my body to run off of. Yes, I have a little bit of excess fat on me and things like that, but the body, that reverse Krebs cycle, if you will, it doesn't really kick in for a few days. So it's like my body's really not eating itself. But then I'll have something to eat with that 300 milligrams caffeine pre-workout. You know, and then next thing I know, I am energized for hours. And it's because for me specifically, and I've seen it with other people, but this is not scientific. This is just anecdotal evidence, whatever the word's called, that if I don't have substance inside of my gut for the caffeine to kind of utilize for my body to produce energy, it ain't going to do anything. I'll go right to sleep.
Yeah, and I see that across the board with really most supplements, right? If you take them on an empty stomach, they will hit your system quicker because the food will slow down the digestive process, right? I mean, your body's got to work to process it, especially if you are consuming it with fats, because fats are the slowest digesting macronutrient. And I think that's why people who are big fans of, say, like the kind of like the MCT oil, collagen coffees, or Bulletproof Coffee is a really popular brand by Dave Asprey. You know, and he's marketing it with a whole lifestyle of like, hey, if you are doing something like intermittent fasting, where you're going to be in a caloric deficit, at least for a portion of the day. And typically this looks like somebody going to bed at 8 o'clock and maybe they don't eat until 1 or 2 the next afternoon. Mm-hmm. The chemistry of the body is really, really fascinating because what happens is because you're not putting fuel in and you're starting to move around and do work, your blood glucose is going to move down, right? Mm-hmm. So your body doesn't like it when your blood sugar gets too high or too low. Mm-hmm. And what happens is your body secretes this great hormone called glucagon, which helps takes energy stores in the form of glycogen. So that's glycogen in your muscles and your liver and your adipose tissue. And it helps mobilize that stored energy to regulate it. And this is great for building better insulin sensitivity, for building better blood sugar control. It's obviously pretty good for fat loss, not great for building muscle. And that's not a shock, because if you're going to build muscle, you need those growth factors.
Yeah.
To be able to survive that maybe daily intermittent fast or committing to that kind of lifestyle, what the coffee will do is, one, it will satiate you, right? Because it's going to act as an appetite suppressant. Mm-hmm. But then when you pair it with the fats, it's not going to be like this huge hit of energy, but you'll get kind of a steadier release of it as it's going to stay in your system a little bit longer. And so I know a lot of people like pairing it with that kind of stuff for those reasons. Yeah. Then you compare that to like, hey, you know, I ate a big breakfast and maybe washed it down with a cup of coffee, right? Now that coffee is coming along with all that food too, right? Yeah. So, and it's interesting, just, you know, the body's process and why caffeine makes you energized is pretty fascinating, because I think a lot of people think that caffeine is giving you energy, which it's not. It's not giving you energy. What your body's doing is it's responding to what it perceives almost as like a poison, where it wants to evacuate it. And that's when you see things like, hey, I have increased focus or an increased heart rate, or now I'm peeing more, right? Because it's trying to rid it out of your system. And that's where those effects that we find favorable, right, that maybe are why you're drinking coffee, that's actually maybe a little peek into the science behind it. Because it's not like the coffee energizes you like food will.
It's, you know, you're speaking my language when it comes to all this fun stuff, because again, there's that strength and conditioning background. You know, I own Barbell Beast Athletics still. So that's my garage gym. That's still why I do a lot of personal training. It's where I work out with Muscle Anarchy, utilizing the concepts that you have with the stuff that I know, and kind of help somebody else get to where they need to be. But that, you know, and then talking with Mike over the years on all this fun stuff is, we thought at one particular time caffeine was actually turning on the central nervous system, and the way that it was responding was a positive. And it is, in a sense, but on the other side, it's also a negative, where it's actually blocking the receptors to the central nervous system to tell you you're fatigued. And it's like, well, wait a second. Do we really want to block the receptors, the natural receptors, to tell you, hey, you're going into these negative aspects of life, you might want to reconsider the fast food. You might want to reconsider always training with intensity. You might want to just do volume training. Volume training and intensity training, two totally different things. You can have intensity with volume, yes, but you know, HIT, high intensity training, was Mike Morant, Mike Mensa.
Yeah, Mike Mentzer, you know, this it's pretty old school. And now when you kind of look at it through the lens of CrossFit, you can see there are kind of like two camps of thought there. Mm-hmm. So you've got the volume guys. There's a gentleman passed away, is a legendary bodybuilding guru named Vince Gironda.
Yes, Vince Gironda.
He was huge in the 60s and 70s. He trained Arnold in the 80s. He was Michael Jackson's trainer. But Vince was like way ahead of the curve. He was the original proponent of the steak and eggs diet. Yes. But this stuff was more volume training, right? It wasn't crazy high intensity, but it was a lot of time under tension, a lot of repetition, and letting the body do what it does. And then you've got the people who are more of the shock the body types. And it started with Mike Mentzer, who was like, you know, it was pretty extreme, where he's like, just do one set as hard as you can and try to recover. And that leads all the way up to like Dorian Yates, right? And he trained that way. And then this guy, John Meadows, and now even some of the champions you see more recently, right? But the truth is, it really depends on who you are and what you respond to. And you know, like it, you can, they're all tools to draw from. You can crack a nut a bunch of different ways. You know, you can see results from lightweight, from heavyweight, from high volume, from low volume. The common denominator is usually working with some kind of close proximity to failure. But when you think about like CrossFit through that lens, right, it's always maximum intensity from the time the clock starts until you finish, like as hard as you possibly can, and every single day. And when people come into Muscle Anarchy, sometimes they bring that mentality to the program and misunderstand it, where they'll see nine sets of back squat, thinking that those nine sets are supposed to be as hard as you can every single set. So we started putting rates of proceed workouts to be able to give people an idea, because the truth is, you know, someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, he really did both. Like, he had the volume and he had the intensity. He would, you know, do a lot of work, but then there would always be like a top set where it was like a maximal effort. But that honestly is going to represent the most amount of stress on your body. So as you get older, you got to be strategic with how you use that, because it's a valuable tool, but it's a double-edged sword.
So, and it's actually kind of funny that the common denominator is the stressor that the body needs to overcome. So we can do it through heavy weights, which Mike was big on, but he wasn't just saying, go do one set, period. He was saying, you know, warm up the muscle and then do one set heavy. So you might take 2 to 3 sets, and then that fourth set is your one set that you're just putting in all the effort and then resting. Go to another body part. But he wasn't talking about training 6 days a week either. He was talking about training 4 days a week. So there's and the most recent analysis that was done by Alan Argon and Brad Schoenfield and Brett Contreras basically showed that, you know, you can train all your volume for one muscle group in a given day and then rest 7 days, or like what Brad put in his book, the Bible of Hypertrophy.
He's got the Science of Muscle Hypertrophy.
He was basically saying, instead of doing it all in one day, do it in 2 days over the course of a 3-day break. So 72-hour rest. So if you do chest on a Monday, then you're doing chest again on a Thursday, but you're not doing the exact same workout. You're doing more of like barbell stuff on a Monday, and then you're doing cable stuff on a Thursday. And then you can do high intensity stuff or strength on Monday with more volume on Thursday. But you're hitting the muscles twice in a given week, which actually showed a increase in response versus all in one day. But in the grand scheme of it, when it comes to fitness, it's a journey. It's not the end destination. So if you're trying to step on stage in 6 months, don't do this alone. First, go hire someone. I'm going to give you a plug. Go hire Dave. So literally, the guy you have done, and I admire the hell out of this, you have done the professional athlete side, you've done the CrossFit professional athlete, and now you've stepped on stage, not just once, multiple times. Yes, we're using, and I'm using testosterone cypionate. I was diagnosed as low T, so I have to use testosterone cypionate. And I put myself right into it, but you can see that I'm not shredded like you. I still have a good layer of fat on me. But that's also because I have a sweet tooth and all the other stressors that come out in life. And I'm not looking to step on stage. I'm looking to stay healthy. I'm staying to do all this stuff. Whereas you have done the professional life. And it's like, you know, you have done it. So you not only have you walked the talk, you have studied the talk, you have studied the walk, you have become what is considered a subject matter expert. And you're not just, you know, one individual. You have your own mentors. You can pull knowledge from other people if you've got stumped. And I'm sure of this because I've seen you grow over the last, how long have I been doing Muscle Anarchy? 4 years, 5 years now? So I've seen it change. I know
beginners are going to be beginners. And first of all, I appreciate those words so much. That's really nice. And I'm, you know, it's nice to, I think as a coach, like you got to walk the walk too, you know, like you can't fake it. You can't just read something in a book and regurgitate it. But the difference between knowledge and information is having really done it yourself or done it with other athletes, because that's bridging the gap between being able to regurgitate the words and actually understanding what it means. And so when I started with everything I've done, I'm like, okay, like I don't feel confident enough to really call myself an expert in this. I need street cred first. Like I got to do this at a really high level before I start giving other people advice and information on it. And there are a lot of great coaches out there, but where, you know, for people looking at coaches, right? there's so many online. You go like go on Instagram, it'll be like everybody's selling a program,
thing,
or this and that. And a lot of the marketing for that will be them, right? So I, you know, it'd be an easy plug for me to be like, look at my body, you know, do what I do. But I think the ultimate measure of a coach is not them, it's their athletes.
Yes.
It's got to be the breadth and depth at which they're able to impact people and being able to like show the hundreds of before and afters, because whatever your take on fitness is, whatever it is you're trying to sell, or your mantra, or the semantics that you're arguing, nothing speaks louder than results. And that's really all people care about. Or they don't really care how or whether you're doing 8 reps or 50 reps. They care that you can get them to where they want to be. Yeah. And so, like, you know, having the community that you're a part of, Josh, like, you know, not just the fact that you guys have so many cool success stories that are all almost like in some ways a reflection of my journey, you know, being a pro athlete, a lifelong athlete, and then finding CrossFit, but then, you know, hitting that roadblock where I'm like, man, I love doing this, but I just can't keep doing it anymore. I keep beating myself up. I don't feel good. I don't like the way I look. Like, I want to see how do I kind of stay functional and stay in the CrossFit space, but still pursue aesthetics. You guys all have the same story. And when you're talking about things like recovery, right, that's really where a lot of the knowledge that not just that I've, you know, experimented with myself with, but what I've seen with my athletes comes into play. Because in our program, we do something where you were mentioning training splits. We train body parts really, really hard one time per week. And that gives athletes 7 days to recover. So if you're like me and you got a bad shoulder or a bad back or a bad knee, you know, if you're doing CrossFit, you might have to train those body parts 2, 3, 4 times a week, and they're never going to heal. You know, there really isn't much of a progression or a system, you know, a framework laid on top of that program. With Muscle Anarchy, I think the biggest reason why people see progress is because for the first time, they're training hard and they're recovering.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing. Now, if you're someone who's like young and has great hormones and malleable tendons, hit your body parts twice a week. Go ahead, have at it, you know? And we have options for people for that kind of stuff, because all these semantics, they're so contextual, you know? Should people train heavy or should they train light? Well, if you've got tissue that's compromised, no, you shouldn't train heavy. Right. And if you're trying to build strength and top end strength and bone density, you shouldn't only train light. But there's always a context there. So it's kind of like all these colors you can choose from on a palette to paint the picture that you want. There's no wrong answer. Right. Yeah. It's just a matter of not boxing yourself into one thing.
Yeah. You know, that's actually kind of a great segue to get into back into the coffee, because when I got into coffee, I was like, this is absolutely gross and so on and so forth. There are people that absolutely love coffee in the darker context, okay? But don't believe that that's more caffeine or that you're going to have a clean cup of coffee, things like that. But there's people that, like Scott Rayo, that really love the acidity that coffee can have, and that's his preference. So coffee and workouts and the context and all that fun stuff, that all comes into play here. What I'm bringing to the market is something that is more vibrant, the clarity, the cleanness of it. I didn't want people to think coffee was always bitter. So that's why I keyed never bitter, always better, bougie coffee. Everything ties into itself. Everything has a contextual meaning. So for anybody that's listening to this and thinks that, oh yeah, you know, dark roast is this or light roast is that, that is your perception on what you believe, but that doesn't mean it's truthful for everybody.
Okay, so let me ask you a question that's way off the map. My wife, she's got this thing called a Ninja Creamy, okay? I don't know if you heard of this. It's like, it's one of those Ninja machines that helps make ice cream. She does like protein ice cream or things like that.
I've seen you guys use it.
Well, I'm like thinking, I'm like, man, we should make some coffee ice cream. That would be delicious. How would you do that? Would you actually just pour the roasted coffee in and maybe stir it around? That would make sense, right? You could do the grounds. I've even seen people do stuff like they're putting the grounds on beef and things like that. And it's crazy how you're like, wow, this really makes things delicious. But I got to try that. I got to try the creamy now and see how that tastes, especially with your coffee. You know, I think for all of our Muscle Anarchy members out there, I would love to get them a sample of your coffee, Josh, and get it in their hands. We love supporting our members, and you know, you're such a good dude. You're so knowledgeable when it comes to this stuff. And it seems like you're really starting to hit your stride on the business front where Legendary's taken off. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're out there listening and you're, you know, an MA member or not, let's get your stuff out there and let's give it a try. Come out to one of our events and start giving out some cups of coffee, and we'll get you guys jacked up before we destroy you in a hypertrophy workout.
There you go. You know, we're doing a lot of events actually here in the DFW. So I've teamed up with some nonprofits like Airplanes and Coffee, where we're getting kids involved with aviation, whether or not it's the mechanic side, the flying side, the tower side. It doesn't really matter. We're getting kids involved very young. But next year, and this is where I was going to take it earlier before we started all this, is we've grown 942% in 6 months. In the last 7 days, we've had that 1,200% increase in our Instagram reach. Next year, this is really, you know, some of the stuff that I've done is really hard to do. So like Aramark is the DOD food contractor. They have all these contracting all over the place. I got in with Aramark. I'm beating out the big S word. I'm not going to say the name, but the big S word, I'm beating them out 70%. I've taken all that business away from them. And that's because my coffee's way freaking better. But the other side of this is there's two big air shows, and one of them is going to be out towards where you're at now, which is called Sun and Fun in Lakeland. So that is in between Orlando and
Texas. I know exactly where it is. Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know where it is, but I mean, we're there. We're going next year. That is a really hard event to get into. That is not, when you're not an aviation company, you're not selling parts, you're not an actual builder of aircrafts. So the fact that I was able to get in with Legendary Aviation Coffee to showcase what we've got, that is tremendous. And that's a 300 to 400,000 people show. Now, Oshkosh is in July, and that's in Wisconsin. That's 750,000 people, give or take, over the course of the 6-7 days. I got in on that one too, when they said they were full of vendors like myself.
Well, I gotta imagine if you're a pilot, you probably want to have some pretty good focus while you're flying an airplane. In fact, when I heard the name Aviation Coffee, the way my head works, it immediately went to like, oh yeah, so these pilots who are getting ripped at the airport bar can like get their shit together before they go and start flying the plane,
right? But they gotta sober up.
Dude, Josh, it's been such a so fun talking with you, man. Great to kind of get to connect in person again too. Where can people find you, man? What are your Instagram handles, your websites? Where can people buy Aviation Coffee?
Yeah, so it's all sitting actually, let's see, right down here where it says Josh Legendary Aviation Coffee. So legendaryaviationcoffee.com, and that is quite literally the handles on our Instagram and Facebook as well. And like I said, man, we're a very personal brand. So if you follow us, we follow you right back. We're not going to be one of these companies that
we
have.
We should do a Thunderbro blend. Can we do that? Can we do a Thunderbro blend? We'll have to jack it up with something, or I don't know. You open it up and there's metal music inside or something.
There you go. We'll work on it. We'll figure out what we can do together. But, you know, we're a very personal brand because it's me and my assistant that are actually doing this. We're not going to be one of these brands that have hundreds of thousands of followers and not following anybody back. Yep. So we follow a little bit more than our current following, and that's because we're engaging. We're very engaging. We don't care if you engage with us. We're going to engage with your content. I engage with
somebody. Our crew, it's such a family at Thunderbro. You know, like I think a lot of our members relate to each other because they're all dealing with the same struggle. They're all, you know, working guys and girls, just trying to find a way to win again in the gym. They love to train and they want to take themselves to that level that they hadn't been able to reach physically. And none of them are trying to be the world's fittest man or fittest woman. You know, none of them are trying to like win the CrossFit games, but it's more of like, how do I thrive, not just survive through life? And when you think about that statement, that's not something that's synonymous to the gym alone. It's really in all aspects of your life, at home, at work, in your job, in the gym, in the bedroom. Like how do you pull that out of yourself to be the man or the woman that you aspire to be? And I think if you're well caffeinated, that probably helps a little bit too.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. You hit it down the head. How do we thrive? How do we not just survive? And you know, you guys are doing an amazing job at Thunderbro. The Muscle Anarchy program is great. I've done the butts and guts stuff as well.
Oh, awesome.
I've done a couple of the other ones. I haven't done the tactical one. I just, you know, the time frame to really commit to those type of programs and shift the way I'm training.
So Josh, you should check out our Muscle Anarchy Express. I think you'd really like it because it's kind of like, I do it a lot. It's like that hit it and quit it. Here are three core exercise movements that are all terrible. You're in and out, you're done. You know, really it's like it takes that session that can be a little bit north of an hour and pulls it down to like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's honestly my favorite way to train is like train hard and fast. And you get diminishing returns after 45 minutes anyways in the gym. So if you can't accomplish it in 45 minutes, you know, you're not going hard enough.
Exactly. You know, and I'm also a pickleball player, so, you know, I'm out there at the courts once or twice a week, and that's me and my dad's time. So I really do have, like, this deep love for that, and, you know, I make sure that nobody bugs me. I turn off my phone. There's no business going on there. That is me and him, and we're out there with the community here in Rockville.
We'll be down here sometime because we got a pickleball court in our backyard. It's, like, all lit up. It's pickleball central, man.
There you go. I love what you guys did with that backyard, man. You guys have transformed it into Thunderbro headquarters and pickleball fun.
So my training partner, Scott, and Scott's like a pro bodybuilder. So he's a big beefy dude.
Yes.
We would go down to the beach and challenge these 60-year-old ladies to pickleball games. And they're fierce. They are really good. I mean, they don't need a lot of mobility to do this. Nope. So
they'll kick your ass too because
that's all they do all day.
They know how to put those shots and they don't even move real fast. But, you know, to them, it's not about that. It's about being strategic and then exposing your weaknesses.
Oh, what's great is like we're real friendly guys, but when we play, if we lose a point, they'll sit there and they'll tell us what we should have done. He's like, oh, you should have had your paddle like this instead of like that. You're like, oh, this is insult to injury, right?
That's great.
Play the game the way I want to.
I love it. Well, I'm going to be out there in April, actually. So I'll take an extra few days from work, and I'll come down and see you, bud.
Hit us up. All right. Thank you so much, Josh. It was great talking with you, brother. And I'll talk
to you. You too, man.
Yep.
Good seeing you again.
Bye-bye.
See you.